joined us as a guest here for many, many years. She is a captain in the U.S. Navy and has written several books and also has all kinds of stories to tell about why and how she happened to get into the U.S. Navy. Make welcome Captain Diane Dykeman from Sioux Falls.
Sherwin, for inviting me again this year. Hello, everybody. How many of you are familiar with Randy Travis and his music?
Yes.
And how about his song, On the Other Hand? That song was written in Nashville in 1984 by Paul Overstreet and Don Slitz. And as soon as they wrote it, they knew they had a hit song. And they hoped it would be recorded by Merle Haggard or George Jones or somebody like that. When they were told that Randy Travis was recording it, they said, "Who is that?" They were afraid that their hit song was going to be wasted on a newcomer. Warner Brothers released the recording, and it went into the Billboard charts. It got up to 67. And it stalled there and then dropped off the charts. Major disappointment. Well, they knew they had to get another song out right away on Randy Travis, so they released 1982. That one got up into the top 10 and he had his first hit. But what to do about On the Other Hand? They didn't want to lose that song. They talked about re-recording it, but Kyle Lenning, who had produced the record, listened to it on the radio, and he said he didn't see how he could possibly do a better job than they had done the first time. Warner Brothers agreed to re-release the same song. This time, it entered the chart at number 64, higher than it had dropped off before, and it shot up to number one. And Randy had his first number one hit. That was followed by Digging Up Bones and Forever and Ever Amen and other number ones. And for 3 years, Randy won almost every country music award that he was eligible for. And he continued having number one songs. But the award shows started going to the new young guys like Clint Black and Ricky Van Shelton and Alan Jackson. But Randy continued with number one hits and a lot of radio play. And in 1990, he was the highest grossing touring artist in the country music industry. But he was also getting worn out. So at the end of 1992, he closed out his band and said he was taking some time off and not going to record or perform for a while. That doesn't mean he was resting. He had been wanting to try acting. So in 1993, he was in 5 movies. And then the next year, he put together a new band and started touring and recording again. By now, though, he didn't get so much radio play, and he didn't have number one records. And by 2000, he no longer had a record contract. So Kyle Lenning suggested that they make gospel albums, and gospel music was something that Randy had wanted to try. So he got into writing gospel songs with a country flavor and with his sense of humor, and they recorded several gospel albums. And by this time, Randy's main concert venues were casinos and churches. When he went to a casino, he would bring his full band and they would play all his country hits and some of his new gospel hits. And when he went to a church, he would bring his acoustic guitar players and they would sing gospel music and talk about their faith. This put Randy in a real quandary. The idea of two such disparate audiences. And he asked a preacher friend of his, what should he do? Is this right that he would perform in a casino to an audience that was drinking and gambling and carousing, and then the next day go into a church and sing gospel music and talk about his faith? And the pastor told him, you keep doing what you're doing. He said, people who attend your concerts might then come to church. People who had never before been in the door of a church. So he said, you just keep doing that. And Randy did, and things were going along with the performances until 2010, when he divorced his wife, Elizabeth. They had been together for 34 years. She had been his manager since the beginning. She believed in him. She gave her money, her energy, her love to making him a star, and they had succeeded. And they married in 1991, but by 2010, that relationship was over. Randy bought a ranch in Texas and moved there with Mary Davis, who became his second wife. In January of 2013, they were loading the bus for a Canadian tour where Randy started having trouble breathing. The plan was to stop in South Dakota for a concert at the Deadwood Mountain Grand on the way to Canada. But it was not to be. Mary took Randy to an emergency center and they diagnosed him with pneumonia, gave him some medicine, and sent him home. Well, the next day, it was even worse. He could barely breathe, so Mary took him back. They walked into the emergency center together, but Randy never walked out. While he was on the examining table, his heart stopped beating. The heart monitor flatlined. The doctors resuscitated him and put him in an induced coma to relieve the pressure on his heart. And they placed him, the unconscious Randy, in an ambulance and took him to the heart hospital in Plano, Texas. There he was diagnosed with viral cardiomyopathy. This is a virus that attacks quickly and presents itself as pneumonia, which is why the doctors in the emergency room had misdiagnosed him. When they started bringing him out of the coma, they discovered that he had suffered a massive stroke. They estimated that the stroke had occurred about the time his heart stopped beating, which was 72 hours earlier, and that meant the stroke mitigation procedures that are usually used were of no value. Randy spent 5 months in the hospital with Mary by his side, almost died several times, and he's left with aphasia, which is a common disease in stroke survivors, although it's something most people have not heard of. Part of the brain is wiped out and the person no longer has the ability to formulate thoughts and speak them. It's considered to be the disease with the poorest quality of life of any disease. People with cancer or Parkinson's disease or ALS can talk to their family and their doctors. They can explain how they're feeling and what they need. People with aphasia cannot communicate. Randy is as mentally as sharp as ever. He knows what he wants to say, but the words don't come out. If you saw his Country Music Hall of Fame induction where he sang Amazing Grace, that came from the other side of the brain, the memory side. He and Mary and the therapist had spent months with him learning one syllable at a time to be able to sing that song. His stroke also left him paralyzed on the right side. He can stand and walk a few steps with assistance, but he spends most of his time in the wheelchair. And if you've seen him or seen pictures of him, you'll notice that his right hand is curled. Well, he and Mary have had to build a new life. They quickly learned that the best therapy was to be out in public and be surrounded by the people who loved Randy and the music industry. So they make a point of attending the concerts of all their friends. They show up at concerts and events by new singers, and of course they're all thrilled to have the legendary Randy Travis there. And then that also shows him that he's still important and he still has a fan base. So they are out in public a lot, and they consider that therapy. They also advocate for laws to help musicians. And Mary does the talking, but Randy is by her side agreeing with what she says. And you can read all those stories and many more in my new biography, Randy Travis, Storms of Life. I have copies down there after Sherwin and Pam finish their show. I'd be happy to autograph for you. And I'd also like to tell you about this one other book called God on a Battle Wagon. Now, I did not write this. I edited it and issued a new copy. It's written by James Claypool in 1944. He was the first chaplain on the battleship USS South Dakota. He was there from commissioning through the two battles of Guadalcanal, through the battle damage repair in Brooklyn, New York, off to the North Atlantic for service with the British Home Fleet, and then back to the South Pacific. He writes his stories for a civilian audience, explaining to them what it's like in wartime, what it's like for their sons to be sailors on a battleship, what it's like being in combat. And he gives advice as what not to write in the letters to their sailors. He tells them, don't say, we need you to come home and help with the harvest. Because this was a wartime story, there are names in here and places that could not be identified in the book. So in the new edition, I have added footnotes to identify what those were. So that is also available down at the table, along with my memoirs and my other biographies. I look forward to talking to you come up after the show. And I also want to let you know I have a country music newsletter, email newsletter I send out bi-weekly, and you can sign up for that down there also. So enjoy Sherwin Linton and the Cotton Kings, and thank you for your attention this afternoon.
Let's have a nice big round of applause for a noted author and wonderful country music historian and Navy captain, Diane Dyckman.